Good evening and good afternoon, folks. I am your host, Fred Houston, and you're listening to another exciting Stone and Tile show. And hey, we're going to be talking about exterior stone restoration or preservation, however you want to call it. So if you're thinking about getting into that part of the business, or if you're thinking of adding that to your current services, you'll want to listen to the show. But before I do, let me go ahead and make a couple of announcements here. First of all, as you know, I'm doing my stone troubleshooting and inspector seminar in Vegas coming up in January. I have a few spots left and only a few spots left. So if you want to get down on that seminar, it's a great seminar. Go ahead and look at it on my website, which is stoneforensics.com. Just go to the training tab and you can see some of the, what we call, what do you call those things? I can't think of the name of them. Testimonials. And also register. It'll give you a whole outline of the thing. Now, if you can't attend the show and you still want to attend it, you can take the correspondence class, or what we call the home study class. And that is also on the website, so you can check that out. All right. Also, a couple of weeks ago, I did the Historic Stone Restoration Seminar live, and that is also available as a download on a podcast with all the materials, et cetera. Again, go to my website, which is stoneforensics.com, under the training tab itself. All right. Let me start off with giving you the call-in number and all the good information if you want to get in on this call. If you have a question concerning what we're talking about today or anything basically to do with stone and tile, I'd be more than happy to help you out. The call-in number is 323-870-3968. That's 323-870-3968. My email is fhouston, that's F-H-U-E-S-T-O-N at gmail.com. You can always go to Facebook, search for Stone Forensics, and send me a message on the messenger there as well, and we'll take that question as well, or comment or whatever. Okay, so let's delve right into exterior stone restoration. For those of you that attended my historic stone restoration, some of these things are very similar, but we're not only talking about historic when we're talking about exterior, we're talking about new as well, because there are some situations where you have to go in and patch and repair. And even if it's not that old, you may have to clean the material or maintain it in some way. So before I actually get into some of the details of exterior stone work, let's talk about the differences. You know, how much different is it than interior? And there's several things. First of all, you have to realize you're dealing with an exterior. You're dealing with rain. You're dealing with snow. You're dealing with sleet. You're dealing with different environmental conditions. So that's going to play a big role in not only how you clean the material, how you restore the materials you use for those, as well as what time of year you're going to perform these procedures. You have an issue with consolidants, sealers. We talked about sealers on a previous show. Is a whole nother ball game when it comes to exterior, and I have some pretty strong opinions when it comes to sealers, and I'm probably get into that right away here in a second, because it's where a lot of people disagree with me. And if you happen to disagree, go ahead and call in. I would love to hear your opinion. So with that said, I do have a list of different things I want to talk about when it comes to exterior stonework. I mean, you know, we have some of the common problems that we see. But since I mentioned sealers, let's talk a little bit about that. Well, without getting into a big lecture on what sealers do, I'm assuming those that are listening to this show know what sealers are. And when I'm talking sealers, I'm talking impregnators. If you don't, go back and listen to that show. I believe I did a whole show on sealers and impregnators. But generally, I am not a big fan of using sealers, impregnators per se, on an exterior stone. And there are several reasons for this. And again, disagree with me if you like, but I've seen a lot of failures when exterior stone has been sealed. Many times it's improper application. Many times it's because it was applied during the wrong time of year. And a lot of the times it's because it was applied when there was still moisture in the stone. And you'll get things like exfoliation, flaking, et cetera, of stone surfaces. And again, I've seen this a million different times. Now, The argument's going to be against my opinion here is going to be, well, Fred, you know, these sealers, these impregnators do breathe. They have a breathing capability. And I think I've harped on this many, many times before. That's not a lie. That's true. They do breathe. But what? Let's look at that for a second. You know, what is breathability? Breathability is not liquid. It's a vapor. So let's assume you have a block of stone, which if you're dealing with exterior, you're probably dealing with either cladding or a block of stones, for example, Indiana limestone, and you have moisture within that stone and you go ahead and you apply an impregnator to it. Well, even though you have that breathability, the vapor breathability, you don't have a way for any liquid moisture that's inside that stone to escape. And what happens in that case is that it builds up pressure. It'll build up salts. It'll carry salts to the surface. And you can get a condition called subfluorescence, and the stone starts to spall. It starts to pit. It'll flake. It'll delaminate. Any number of issues that occur. Now, that's the main reason I'm not a really, really big fan of using these impregnators or sealers on exterior surfaces. There are, however, exceptions to the rule. And I've said this many times to my students, I love the stone industry because for every rule that's out there, so-called quote-unquote rule, we have an exception to the rule. So there are several exceptions. Let me talk about one exception that I had in an actual case that I did in a very, very large building, exterior building, that was clad in a Chinese granite. Now, those of you that are familiar with Chinese granites, and when I'm talking about Chinese granites, I'm not talking about granites that are brought to China, fabricated, and then shipped all over the world. I'm talking about granite actually from China itself. A lot of those granites contain a very high content of iron. And in this particular building, it was a $90 million building. All the cladding, after less than a year, brand new building, after less than a year, started oxidizing, started rusting, if you will. In that case, I was called in to determine, can we remove the rust? And the answer to that in this particular case was yes, because it came to the surface. It was easy to remove. But how do we prevent it from continuing to come back? Well, it's kind of difficult to say 100% it's not going to come back. But in that case, I did recommend a sealer. But what we ended up doing is what we call trials or samples, or sometimes what you may want to call demos, where we went in, cleaned several areas, applied the impregnators. We tested several different impregnators, and then we let them set through an entire cycle. And what I mean by an entire cycle, in this particular building, this was located in the northwestern portion of the United States. We have four seasons. So you've got a hot season, you've got two mild seasons, spring and fall, and then you have winter time, which so you have a lot of ice. And so we wanted to see how the stone was going to react to those four seasons. Now, that's ideal. And in this particular case, it was an ideal situation, but you don't always have that ideal situation. But we ended up picking one particular type of impregnator that worked very well. And as far as I know, that was a few years ago. It has done its job. We made sure that it was applied to a dry stone. We made sure that it was done during the right time of year, not too hot like during the summer. Springtime and fall is probably a good time, making sure it wasn't a wet season. So there are a lot of variables involved if you're going to use an impregnating type sealer on an exterior stone surface. Now, when it comes to historic work, and again, we did a whole seminar on historic stone work, is a whole different ballgame. You may have cases where the stone is actually sugaring, or in other words, powdering. And the term sugaring comes from that if you touch the stone or poke the stone with a pen or something, the material actually falls apart almost in a sugar pattern, like you have a handful of sugar. Then you want to use what you call a consolidant. So let's talk a little bit about consolidants. I remember attending a seminar, an NPT, a National Park Service, NPS, I'm sorry, a seminar in New York City a number of years ago, and the whole conference, 3-day conference, was on the use of consolidants in stonework. And they had professors from all over the world, contractors, everyone got up there and gave their opinion, their data, whatever on these consolidants that were being used. And I came away from that 3-day seminar thinking, I'm scared to death to use consolidants on stone. All kinds of funky things can happen. The stone can turn colors. The stone can fall apart, even worse, come apart in chunks. So there's a lot of caution when you use consolidants. So if you're going to use a consolidant for whatever reason, for densifying the stone, making the stone, you know, holding it back together, and that's what consolidants do. Consolidants actually bind the stone back together. You have to do a lot of testing. You have to make sure you use a product that the proper consolidant with a type of stone, because, I mean, I could do a whole lecture just on consolidants, but you have different types of consolidants that work differently. Some are cured by moisture. Some are self-curing. Some require, you know, other types of curing methods, depending on the type of stone you're dealing with. Are you dealing with a limestone? Are you dealing with a granite? Are you dealing with concrete? Are you dealing with brick? So it all has, you have to be very experienced. And three things that I recommend you do if you're using a consolidant on exterior work is to test. Make sure that that particular consolidant is compatible. Make sure that it works. And finally, make sure that it's not going to do anything, any funky reactions whatsoever. So that's my dissertation there on sealers and consolidants. And again, if you disagree, that's fine. But I can probably back up what I'm saying with a ton of examples and stories of where I've seen misapplications, the wrong material used on the wrong stone, in the wrong environment, et cetera, where they have failed. So I know the sealer companies are going to be down on me saying, well, Fred, you know, our sealer can be used on an exterior, and, you know, and it can in those particular situations. But in you know, the fact of the matter is you have to be extremely, extremely careful. All right. If you have an opinion, if you have a question about that part of it, give me a holler, 323-870-3968. That's 323-870-3968. I'm going to go ahead and move on, and let's take an example. Let's say you get called in to do some restorative work on an exterior. You know, we can go anywhere from a one-story building on up to a skyscraper, if you like. But let's say you have a three-story Indiana limestone building. And for those of you who don't know what Indiana limestone is, if you live in a major city, New York City, Boston, Chicago, any of those large cities, you're probably going to see many, many buildings with Indiana limestone. If you don't know what it is, Google it. Go to the Indiana Limestone Institute. You can get all kinds of information on there. But you go in and you look at this Indiana limestone building. And first of all, it has a lot of soiling. You want to, number one, conduct a survey. You want to know, okay, where is the soiling? Is it only on one side of the building? What type of soiling is it? Is it carbon soiling from buses going by? Is it weathered? Have mold? Does it have algae growing on it? Does it have vines growing on it? You want to do a complete survey and take a look at what type of soiling or what type of exterior material might be on that stone, i.e. the biological growth as well, because you're going to require different methods in order to remove that. And quite honestly, if you're pricing this out, you want to be able to know how long it's going to take you to remove, you know, a certain type of soiling, what you have to use to remove it. And hopefully we'll have time to get into the actual methods, what chemicals you may or may not use to remove that. And then you have to look at the structure, the integrity of the stone itself. You know, what type of issues does it have? Does it have a rising damp problem? So let's talk about what that is. If you go walk down a sidewalk in a big city and it has just rained, a lot of times you can see, a lot of people will call them a tide mark, T-I-D-E, a tide mark on the outside of the stone. That's rising damp. That's where the moisture gets into the stone. It rises up into the stone. It can go up a couple inches. It can go up several feet, or it can go up many, many feet. I've seen it go very, very high. And why is that a problem? That's a problem because what happens is, especially in your northern climates, you know, Boston, New York City, Chicago, Minneapolis, where you have de-icing salts that are used, what happens when the springtime comes, all those salts are now dissolved in the water or the rainwater or the melting ice and snow, and that wicks up into the stone, into that rising damp section, and you end up with spalling. You end up with the stone pitting. You end up with subfluorescence. So that can be a real issue that will, if you have a particular question on that, just go ahead and give me a call and we'll discuss that a little bit further. You want to look at the stone to determine, you know, efflorescence and subfluorescence can also come from other things other than de-icing salts. It can also come from salts within the material itself, any kind of setting bed that's there. So anything whatsoever can come from. You want to look at the weathering. You know, how has a stone held up to weathering? Acid rain. Does that particular area that you're looking at or that particular city have acid rain? And not only in that area, but you can actually have what we call microclimates within a city. And I've seen this in certain areas where you can have a concentration of an area that gets a lot of acid rain for it. Maybe there's a smokestack nearby. Maybe there's a coal fire plant nearby. So it's going to require a lot of work and a lot of digging, asking the right questions, and doing the proper survey. With structural stone, like Indiana limestone, as opposed to cladding, you have a condition known as, or a condition that can occur, known as blind exfoliation. And the best way to describe blind exfoliation is to go back to your geology, and let's look at Indiana limestone. Indiana limestone is formed in layers. It's a sedimentary material, so it's formed in layers. So imagine a cake. And imagine that cake has, you know, several layers. Now you go in, you take a slice of that cake, and then where you go in, you're going to eat a piece of cake, you slice it off, and depending on how you orient that slice, in other words, if you hold it as it comes out, all the layers are on top of one another, or you turn it on the side, and now you have a layer facing you, and the layers are behind each layer. Well, if the stone is cut that way, if it's cut so the layers are flipped on an angle, if you will. In other words, that piece of cake flipped over, so instead of the layers being on top of one another, they're behind one another. You can get salts that go in between those layers and actually separate those layers, and that may not be visible to the naked eye. It's what we call blind exfoliation. In other words, they exfoliate, they separate. So how do you determine whether you have a stone that has that issue? Because if it does, it can eventually just fall off. That layer can slough off. You tap on the stone. You can take a screwdriver. You can take anything that's hard and just tap on the stone, and you will hear the difference. Similar to if you guys have had to do sounding tests on floors, you have a very similar situation where you can actually tap on the stone itself, and you can hear where it's hollow. If you hear a hollow sound, there's chances are that's blind exfoliation. Can that be repaired? Somewhat, yes. There's a technique called pinning, where you actually drill holes through the stone and you take pins. They can be epoxy pins. They can be stainless steel pins. And you pin the layers back together so they don't end up flaking off. And now they will probably eventually, but at least that will buy you some time. So that's some of the things you got to look for there when it comes to blind exfoliation. You want to look at stone that needs to be repaired. Chunks are out of it. Then you're looking at, there's some terminology you may have never heard in the interior sector of restoration work, and that is you might have to do a Dutchman repair. Dutchman repair is where you actually go in and cut out the bad area of the stone and put a new piece in. Patching work. You have to be extremely careful with patching work because a lot of you guys are out there using polyesters, your typical Akimi, your K-Bond, your 10X. Those materials are polyesters, and I did a whole lecture on this in one of my shows where polyester is not good for exterior stonework. It breaks down under UV light. It doesn't like moisture, so you don't want to use polyesters. You want to use epoxies or... There are now proprietary materials, especially for limestones. For example, Jahn, J-A-H-N, by Cathedral Stoneworks has a material. I believe Akinina has a material. Bondstone has a limestone repair material. And they're all really good repair materials. They're a little tricky to use. And I would recommend getting training. And all those companies, almost all those companies, offer you certification and training in order to use their materials. As a matter of fact, I think Jahn will not sell to you unless you've been through their certification program. So if you're going to do a lot of that patchwork on limestone, I would highly recommend attending one of those classes. They're very informative, and you'll learn a lot. So we're still on the survey thing. We're still looking at the stone. We're still determining, you know, if we have an issue or not. I mentioned salt, de-icing salts. If you're in a northern climate, ask what kind of salts they're using. If they are using rock salt, which is a typical rock salt, that's really bad. You'll see sidewalks torn up, the concrete sidewalks torn up. I've seen terrazzo torn up, you know, exterior stone torn up due to that rising damp where the salts are sucked into the stone and the salts start crystallizing. There are salts out there, and I actually did an article of salts that you should you can use that don't crystallize. And anybody's interested in that article, send me an email at fhouston@gmail.com, fhouston@gmail.com, and I'll go ahead and get you a free copy of that if you're listening either now or later on during the archives. And, you know, and while I'm thinking about it, let me give out the phone number one more time. That's 323-870-3968. So when it comes to doing this survey, you've got a lot to look at, and you don't only want to look at the issue with the stone. You want to look at other things. You want to look at windowsills. You want to go look at wood elements. You want to look at the metal elements. Not only do you need to look at those for the purposes of protection to clean the stone or whatever, those might be deteriorated. So you don't want to go in there and have to, you know, clean a stone building, and then the owner comes back to you and says, hey, you know, you ruined my windows or whatever. So extremely careful. You want to survey it. And, you know, with today's cell phones having really good cameras on them, take pictures of everything. And a little tidbit that I like to use is I take a little scale, a ruler, if you will, and place that in a picture up against the, say, there's a sill that's damaged, it has a chunk out of it. You know, go ahead and, you know, put your scale down next to it. That gives you a reference size, and then take a picture of it. And this all goes into your, believe it or not, will go into your bid proposal to show this is what needs to be repaired, and this is how much it's going to cost to repair this. So there are a number of problems that can occur when you do the survey, or I shouldn't say occur, but that you will notice when you do the survey. So again, make sure you do a detailed walkthrough. Now, this may require some equipment. If you're dealing with, you know, something taller than two stories, you're going to need more than a ladder. You may need a high lift. You may need to use scaffolding on the building. You may need to use swing bridges. I mean, there's a number of different types of equipment you may need to use. And you need to include that in your bid. You can rent these. I know when I've done a lot of my inspections, or back when I did a lot of this work, I'd have professional companies come in and set them up for me. I'm not an expert in scaffolding. I'm not an expert in swing stages. So, you know, have the professionals come in and set it up for you so you don't end up getting hurt, because it can be extremely dangerous. You know, I'm sure you've seen those things in on TV where guys are on a swing stage. You know, they're either doing some work on the building or washing windows, and it collapses. It can happen. Believe me, I've seen it happen. It can happen. So if you go to, there's actually a really good website. It's the National Park Service Preservation Briefs. And I mentioned this in my historic stone restoration class. If you go to that website, there's a couple of great papers that they have in there that are free. They have pamphlets that are free you can download, which will describe all these things. It's going to describe the terminology, exfoliation, crumbling, spalling, efflorescence, subfluorescence, and it goes on and on and on. And we just don't have the time to cover it here in this radio show, but I'm just kind of giving you a general overview. Okay. The next thing we want to look at is, okay, we have a building and it's a stone building, obviously, and it's got some soiling on it, and you want to clean it. What's really popular right now, or has been popular for quite a while, and it's quite effective, is the use of water. And when I say the use of water, I'm saying the use of water only, no chemicals whatsoever. Now you may say, Fred, that's ridiculous. How can water clean the building? After all, it rains all the time. Doesn't that clean the building? And the answer to that is yes, and the answer to that is no. So let's take a look at the building. Now, in some cases, I wish this was TV rather than radio, but I'll try to describe this. If you look at a building and you look at the windowsills, a lot of times you can see a white streak along the corners of the sill. In other words, you have the sill on the bottom, the water hits that sill and runs off on the off to the sides, and you end up with what looks like clean streaks. And why is those streaks clean? Because the rainwater has cleaned it. So rarely, unless you're going through a hurricane, does rain hit the building at a 90-degree angle. It'll hit it at various angles, straight down or whatever the angle it is. So it's really not hitting the building whatsoever. So what they found is that a lot of times you can actually clean the building with water only. Light pressure washing. What I mean by light pressure washing, got to be careful with pressure washing. I wouldn't go any more than say 300 PSI unless you really know what you're doing. They use what they call intermittent sprinkler heads. I mean, a lot of times you can see buildings that are being cleaned that way. You'll have scaffolding set up on the outside of the building, and you'll have misting or sprinkler heads that actually go on at a certain amount of time and go off. And what that allows it to do is to, you know, clean the stone with water and then let it dry, clean it and let it dry. And, you know, number one rule in cleaning anything that's porous, I don't care if you're dealing with exteriors, I don't care whether you're dealing with interior, whatever, is to pre-wet everything. Because chances are the soiling that you're dealing with 99% of the time is on the surface or penetrated very, very small into the surface. So by saturating the stone with water, you're allowing that, in this case, the water only, to clean off the surface. If you're using chemicals, your chemicals will work even more effectively because you're pre-wetting the surface. And that applies also to stain removal, which we went over in another show when we talked about pre-wetting the stained area, and that's to isolate the stain. So pre-wetting is extremely important. There are other techniques that are being used out there to clean exterior buildings. You have dry ice. You have baking soda, soda blasting, not sand blasting, but soda blasting with very fine abrasives. There's a system out there. Actually, there's a number of systems, but the system that I'm used to, that I'm familiar with, is called the JOS system, J-O-S, Aerosoft, E-R-A-S-O-F-T, I believe. You can Google it and find out, but it uses various blasting media like baking soda, walnut shells, some synthetic type materials, and it does it. It's under pressure into a vortex. It creates like a swirling motion, and you can actually take this nozzle and put it on your hand, and it won't do anything to your skin, but you put it on a stone and it'll clean it. So very effective system. It's a little slow because you're doing, you know, small areas at a time, but it's very, very effective. We're now starting to see laser cleaning being used. Laser cleaning has been used in museums. As a matter of fact, if you want to, I was on a Facebook the other day, and someone has, and I'm half tempted to order this because it's $40 to see if it's going to work on stone, but it's actually a laser that's used on metal to remove rust. And it's amazing. It just looks like a hairdryer, and you point it at the rust on metal, and it just cleans the rust right off. And you can put your hand in front of it, and it won't hurt your hand, but it will reoxidize, or reverse oxidize, I should say, the rust. And when I saw that, I was curious, you know, I wonder if that would actually work on stone surfaces. I don't know, but I'm half tempted to spend the $40 plus shipping and handling to find out if it's going to work. And if it doesn't, oh well, I'll report back to you guys and tell you it doesn't work. But I'll also have it for removing rust on some metal surfaces. Now, again, you have various methods for cleaning: the water only, misting, you have fogging, steam cleaning, pressure washing. You have the abrasive systems, which are your JOS system that I just mentioned, baking soda systems. You have the laser cleaning, dry ice, carbon dioxide is another one I've seen used, hot water, and the water only that we described. Now, where would you use chemicals? Well, obviously you would want to use chemicals in an isolated area for removing stains or whatever, but in some cases you're going to need to use chemicals in order to remove the soiling on the stone. Now, I should have probably mentioned back in the very, very beginning that in many cases, you're not looking for a pristine overall look. In other words, you're not trying to make that building look brand new again. You just want to make it look better. And that needs to be discussed and communicated to your customer. Because a lot of times you won't be able to get it that pristine color. There are chemicals out there that can be used, but when you're using chemicals, you need to approach with caution, extreme caution, because remember, you're dealing with a building, you're dealing outside, you have wind, it can drift, and you can end up buying a lot of cars. And I don't mean from the money you make cleaning the stone, I mean from the mistakes you make from overspray on the car surfaces or other surfaces for that matter. A lot of these chemicals are acids. Some are two steps, alkalines and acids. There are several good companies out there that are very knowledgeable in exterior cleaning with these chemicals. One is called Prosoco, P-R-O-S-O-C-O. Very good company, very knowledgeable, good chemicals. Big fan of them. Another one is called Dietrich Chemicals, and there's a few others out there, but those are the two that I'm very, very familiar with. All right, if you have any questions, now would be the time to call, 323-870-3968. That's 323-870-3968. Again, you can send me an instant message if you'd like on Messenger, on Facebook. Again, just search for Stone Forensics on Facebook page, or if you like, send me a direct email to fhuston@gmail.com, and we'll get your question answered. And I don't care whether it's about what we're talking about here, exterior work, or if it's anything else to do with stone and tile related. That's what I'm here for, and that's what this show is for. Equipment. I kind of mentioned this as we're going along. You have equipment where you need to be able to reach the material, the stone. You may need high lifts. You may need scaffolding. You may need swing stages. So all that needs to be set up, and that's going to cost you. And whether you have that equipment, whether you have a department that sets up that equipment, or what I did is just hire a company that is very familiar with that. You need to make sure you follow all the OSHA rules, especially if you're dealing with a city. A lot of times, I remember doing just inspection work on a building in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago, and we had OSHA come by and a city come by asking us what we were doing. They asked us questions like, okay, we were happened to be on a swing stage on this particular job, and they said, well, now what would be the maximum wind that you would, be on that swing stage? So, at the time we had no idea. So we said probably 15 miles an hour. Whether that was right or not, I don't know. But, they were concerned. We had safety harnesses. The safety harnesses need to be checked to make sure, because if that swing stage or scaffolding collapses, you want to be able to just be able to dangle there. And again, I'm sure you've seen that on the news where a lot of these guys have, had their swing stage collapse or scaffolding collapse or whatever, and they're hanging there by a rope. Well, that rope happens to be their harness with their safety rope on there, and there's a reason for that. Hard hats, all the equipment that comes along with that. So, with exterior work, it's not necessarily a piece of cake. Now, I'm not saying interior stone restoration is a piece of cake, but again, I started this show out with, in the beginning, exterior work is a whole different animal. It's a whole different ballgame. And I would highly recommend getting trained either through my seminars or whoever else is giving seminars and listening to people that have already done it. It's kind of competitive, I'll be honest with you. It's a very competitive field. There are a lot of companies out there, especially in your major cities, your New York City, Boston, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles. There are areas that are very competitive. And the question I get all the time is, Fred, how do I price exterior work? And it's a tricky question. And I don't have a lot of time here in order to describe, how you price it. But basically, you want to be able to figure out how long is it going to take you to do the work. Your material cost is going to be little. Your setup cost might be a lot, considering you may have to, scaffold a building or swing stage it or whatever. So that cost is going involved in there. Your insurance is going to be higher. So if you're doing interior stone restoration work now, and you're going to try exterior, unless you're doing very, very small jobs, you need to talk to your insurance company, because insurance is going to be different and it's going to be a lot higher. So you need to take that into consideration. You may need skilled labor to do it. In certain cities, you're going to need union laborers. In cities like Chicago, New York City, Boston, I require that you have union laborers. You may have to pay what we call prevailing wage. And I'm not going to get into what that is, but the wage is already set. So if you're used to paying a guy $15 an hour, and you go into a city that has prevailing wage and you have to pay him $40 an hour, and you priced it for the $15, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to lose your shirt. And as a matter of fact, I know companies who have actually gone out of business by making that mistake. So approach it with caution. There's a lot to exterior stone restoration that I had mentioned, a lot more than I need to go that I can go into here. I could spend a whole week on just that topic alone. In my seminar, the stone inspection seminar that we do, we talk about inspecting that. We talk about these failures along with interior. So if you're interested in learning more, I'd encourage you to sign up for that seminar. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I just have a few spots left for that particular seminar in Vegas coming up in January. Unless you want to take on this class, then go ahead and give me a call. All right, I think we're going to wrap things up. Unless you have a quick question, I'll give out the number one more time and give you a few minutes here to call in. That's 323-870-3968. That's 323-870-3968. If you have to be careful. When you're talking anything over, say, two stories high, we talked about the equipment, but there's all kinds of other things that can go wrong. Things falling on people. You may have to set up nets. If you're using chemicals, you may have to capture all your effluent. In other words, let's say you're using an acid or an alkaline. It doesn't really matter what pH scale you're using. And that's going down on the street. That's ruining plants. A lot of times you have to catch that, put it into a container, a drum, have it hauled off. And it could be considered hazardous waste. So there's a lot to think about. The time of year, I'd mentioned that you do this work. Sometimes there's city ordinances for when you can do this work, how you can do this work, or there may be bans on certain chemicals in certain cities that you can't use. So be very, very careful. So in essence, if you have a question, go ahead and even after the show here, send me an email, fhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuestonfhuest I had mentioned, I have the article on de-icing salts, the proper type of de-icing salts. Send me an email. I'll be more than happy to email you a copy of that article I've done on the proper type of de-icing salts that you can use if you happen to live in a northern climate. And if you do, I'm sorry. I live in Florida. I don't have the issue. Sorry about that. I had to put that tease in there to all my northern friends and my southern friends too. South got a nasty snowstorm here the other day. So anyway, with that said, I'm going to close for this week. I'll be back next week. If anybody has a suggestion for a topic, feel to write me, give me a call. And if you want to be interviewed for whatever reason, it has to do with stone and tile, you want to be on this show. We're getting a lot of listeners. We've been doing this now for 10 months now. So 1 year anniversary will be coming up in a couple of months. I enjoy doing them. I enjoy this information. So until next week, we'll see everybody again, same time, same station. Everybody have a great weekend. See you later.